Welcome back to the Bossy Jabbypreneur podcast. This is episode 76, How to Thrive in an Unconventional Relationship. So this is season 6. In this season, we will be talking about the various types of relationships we have and how they are all intertwined. Today's guests are a trio of relationship coaches teaching singles and couples how to have successful relationships, including those in polygyny. So I'm excited about this conversation. So join me today, inshallah, as I chat with coaches Anila, Nasir, and Fatima. And they're sitting in order. So I actually like it. You got, I love it, mashallah. They are sitting in exact order for all of you. So jazakallah khair for agreeing to be on. Again, I've wanted to have this conversation with all of you. And I think this particular season, we're focused on relationships. So you guys know I talk about business, but there are the relationships that are outside of the business that impact the business. And so I wanted to dive into that for season 6, inshallah. So you guys are kicking off season for me. So Yes. So please tell us a little bit more about yourselves. And then together forming outstanding relationships, inshallah.
Okay, good stuff. I guess I'll start being the imam of the family. But we are the founders of Outstanding Personal Relationships. Coach Fatima and I have been married now over 27 years. And Coach Nyla and I have been married for 12 years. So we practice polygyny, which means a man having multiple wives, which is under the umbrella of polygamy. And we have 12 children total. I have 10 biological children and 2 bonus children with Coach Nyla. Bonus children, a better, more loving term than stepchild. If that makes sense. Okay, so a little bit about our story is that I met Coach Fatima when I was 14 years old. It was a high school sweetheart and stuff like that. And 5 years after I met her, got married, and I met Coach Nyla. My mid-30s through business, actually. Some business stuff going on. So she knew our family and so on, and ended up becoming Muslim and getting married. She'll share that, I guess. But nevertheless, we got married a little 12 years ago and decided that, you know, since we didn't have a lot of resources, the road was rocky going to and fro and a lot of stuff going on, that, you know, after we figured it out, after we reverse engineered some things and put best practices and things in play after investing in ourselves, we had to weigh, do we keep the success of it to ourselves, like most successful polygynous couples or people that practice polygyny, or do we go ahead and benefit other people? And we chose the latter because the Prophet is trying to let us know that a lot of times says the people Allah loves the most are the ones who benefit the most people. So that was our drive. And then we ended up forming outstanding personal relationships a few years after that. And you know, and growing and really empowering people, especially in this space where it's overlooked, but it's an ancient solution to a modern day problem. And of course, the all wise would not have allowed it to be permissible if there was not a lot of wisdom behind it. And I'm the person who chose to practice polygyny, because the wise don't practice it, I practice it with them. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Listen, I want to dive into that a little bit later, but we're going to hear from Coach Nyla and Coach Fatima first. But I want to touch on that part right there, that he practices polygyny. Listen, okay, I hear you.
Go ahead.
Your part of the story.
I'm like, huh?
I was trying to lump it all in there together, so that didn't work. Anywho, yes.
Y'all were trying to get away.
Hey. It's late. Anyway. All jokes aside, yes, Coach Nadir is correct in what he was saying about how OPR started. I didn't think it would turn into this, but I was in the arena of coaching women. But then I was thinking, I'm like, I can't be nobody's polygyny coach. Because I ain't trying to be in polygyny with nobody. So, but a good friend saw more in me than I saw myself. But she said, I think this is your calling. I think this is something that's beneficial. Because she actually brought a woman to me at a coffee house, another sister. And the both of them were just sitting there. And she said, I think when I got done, and she was like, I think this is your calling. Like, I know you don't want it to be, but I think it is. So I embraced it after after that, I'm like, you know what? I need to do this work, because all three of us have heavily invested in personal development, wellness, and just growth over years and years and years. So to just come together and just focus on helping other people matter to the three of us, maybe at different times, but indeed to the three of us. And then it just really secured the strength of our family, which comes first and foremost for me.
Mashallah. I'm beautiful. Listen, mashallah. Go ahead, Coach Nyla.
Well, a little bit about me. I was born, no, I'm just playing. But Coach out there kind of got into it a little bit when he was talking about, you know, how we formed OPR and different things like that, and then the going into the practicing polygyny aspect, because we'll get a number of questions like, you know, well, you chose this, or, you know, why did you, you know, marry a married man and all these other things like that. I was married before, so sometimes when people don't understand, they think that just because you're an incoming wife that, you know, you don't understand what monogamy looks like, you know. So that was kind of a thing for me. Married, divorced, had two children by the time I got married again in polygyny, you know. So, and as Coach Nadir said before, I knew the family, I knew them through business. And I used to coach women myself, and I still do, of course. But actually, before then, my first business that I ever got into was in like network marketing. So it was like pretty cool. And over time, I actually met them. I knew them, met them. So I wasn't thinking about polygyny. Wasn't thinking about them as a family or anything like that. I married, divorced, knew that polygyny was an option in Islam. I knew that. I knew that before I even converted to Islam, because people would always tell me when I was studying that, you know, that husbands can have more than one wife. Do you know? And it was so interesting to me. I'm like, y'all don't know anything else about Islam. That's one thing you know. So I'm like, and I said, you know what? Let me find out more about that. Even though I wasn't even looking at the time, this was before I became Muslim, before I converted. But I still wanted to know, if people are telling me something about the religion or the way of life that I'm studying, I want to study more about it. So I want to see if they're true, if they're, you know, what's true, what's not, and everything like that. So I knew that that was a thing before I even thought about being in polygyny, but knowing that that was an option, and knowing that Coach Nadir was a great leader, great father, husband, all that stuff. You know, when you see people that they actually, they're showing you what it is. It's like a lot easier when you can see what people are doing. And the family I loved, you know, so I mean, just by, you know, what I've experienced and, you know, what I've seen from a distance and, you know, just what I experienced the time that I was able to experience it. So, you know, that's kind of the long and the short of it, kind of how it started, you know, with me. Actually, I do tell people, though, make sure, you know, you get your wali, wakiler involved, because that's, you know, pretty much what I did. And, you know, like I always tell people, he could have said no. So, you know, so when people do that, and people kind of look into polygyny, and it's like, it seems as though that someone comes in and is trying to wreck a family, or they're trying to manipulate something, you have to understand that the man is the one who makes the decision. And of course, Coach Nadir started that when he was like, it was my decision to practice it. So people got to understand that as well, that it is the man's decision. So, but that's kind of how that started.
Mashallah. I mean, y'all's intro, I mean, we could just leave it there. We could cut the interview off just at the intro you all gave. So you guys said a mouthful, and I'm just going to quickly recap, because you guys said a lot. And just from Coach Nasir's, you know, intro, is the man decides to practice on polygyny. And I'm going to tell you why, for me, that I'm not in polygyny. I've never been in a polygynous relationship. But why that is the most important thing that he could have said is because, to me, when I see relationships that don't work, I don't look to the women, whether it's two or three or four that are in it. I look to what is the brother doing? Like, what is the husband? Because I feel like you as the man, you set the tone. And I feel like you are the owner of whether there's some riff and all of that. So one of the questions that we have, you know, I feel we'll go further into that, but I also wanted to speak to the personal development piece, because it sounds like individually there was personal development for each of you, but then I want to talk about also the development as the trio. So as the trio in Shaw. So what does the individual personal development look like for those who are in polygyny? And I want to talk about that specifically, because I feel like that needs to happen. And tell me if I'm wrong.
No, absolutely. Here's the challenge. It's not just what does it look like in polygyny. We'll tell you that part. The issue is that we are not taught that in general throughout life. We have to discover it or come across it or have somebody else introduce us to it. There's not a personal development class after graduation from high school or middle school, or, you know, so we deal with people who talk all the time that just because you may be post-pubescent doesn't necessarily make you a man or a woman. So we're dealing with grown adults, 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, with the maturity levels of five-year-old toddlers or adolescents. So thankfully, when I was a teenager, I got introduced to a book. I think my first personal development book was The Magic of Thinking Big. And it was dealing with Amway and learning different business models and stuff like that, because entrepreneurship, you have to grow yourself. But one of the quotes that stuck with me back then, that was attributed to Mark Twain, I don't know if it's true or not, if he said it, but it said, never let schooling interfere with your education. And my mentor, two-time felon, had a heart attack, smoking crack when he was a teenager. I mean, really, really bad story. Today makes multiple six figures a month. Okay, so, you know, he told me, you know, your past doesn't equal your future. So he started dropping these little philosophies on me, and I got some cassette tape. That's how old it was back in the 90s. Some cassette tapes, and started listening to the things, started learning philosophies my parents didn't know and didn't teach me. You know, no one around, and I was the one, they said, by the time you're 21, you'll be locked up again. That's the route I was on at the time. We all were born into Christian families. We all accepted Islam. Later on in life, I was in my teens and so on. But so somebody had to drop some seeds on us, right? So with those seeds, you got to kind of learn that it's a planting process. So with personal development, you got to plant good seed. You have to cultivate, and then comes the harvest. So it's over time. So what it looks like now is totally different. I mean, going through a couple books a week, whatnot, now on Audible, it's so easy. But I was told three things, and I'm going to be quiet because, you know, got to hear from the ladies. Everybody's journey is different, but I was told three things. You got to change your life more than anything else. My mentor said, one, it's the books you read. The books you read, because these things drop, these principles and everything else, the books you read, the audios that you listen to, how you're feeling. You see, like, cut off music, turn that stuff on, it's bubblegum for your ears. All right? And the people that you hang around. He said, if you hang around five broke people, you're bound to be the sixth. You know, so he said, these three things, he said, always remember that success leaves clues. So personal development for me, since I came from a background of poverty, my mother is Puerto Rican, my father's Black, so I might speak a little fast, that's that Boricua side coming out. But I knew that I didn't want what my parents had. My father was working, he wasn't there most of the time before they got divorced. You know, I saw different things going on, so I'm like, I didn't want it. So I grabbed on to mentors that could relate to me, and they started putting me in different books and told me to read. And then when I, you know, learning about Islam and knowing the first word of Quran that was revealed was Iqra. You know, Iqra, this is Rabbi Khadagi Khalid, right? From Surah Iqra. So with that, I'm like, I'm in it, I'm dedicated to it, and I had to change me, and that changed everything around me. So that was kind of my story with personal development.
MashaAllah, that is so important. And I like that you brought up that particular surah and literally the first revelation, Iqra. And I think, you know, so the main audience that we have are women. And that is one of the things that I encourage them is that, like you said, seeking that knowledge, ikra. You know, it's not even now today, it's not even just reading. It's like you said, it's the audio, it's the people that you hang around. Mm-hmm. For you guys that come from network marketing, that come from personal development, it truly is, you know, your business is built on the people that you are around. Your network, it becomes your network. And I bring, the thing I love, I know, I already know, the thing I love about business and being having an entrepreneurial mindset is that you can bring what is in entrepreneurship, you can bring to into your life. And the beauty of Islam is that Islam is such a practical way of life that all you've got to do is, like you said, ikra, go read the Quran. Surah Baqarah, you want to know how to do business? Go read Surah Baqarah. MashaAllah. Would love to hear from either Coach Nyla or Coach Fatima or both, inshallah. Same question. What does the individual
person
look like?
Well, one thing that it looked like for me was that I had to make sure that I was being a good mentor to my daughters. And I didn't want them to think that their father had to come home, share with me what he found through personal development, fix me, and then, you know, I can get in the game, right? I had to show them that, no, I get in the game. Because he's living life as a Muslim man, and I'm living my life as a Muslim. So our lives look very different. So fatherhood and motherhood intersect. However, they're different. They're very different. And because we raised girls first, they had to look at me and go, okay, now what are you going to do? And I'll tell you why very quickly. This is important, especially when they're very young. When we were flying over here, there was a family in a row next to us. And the little girl said, Daddy, what do you do? And he said, I'm a doctor. And she knew that. She said, well, Mom, what do you do? And she said, I'm like at home. She said, but what do you do? And she didn't couldn't say anything. She said, because Mommy, you need to be somebody too. And that little girl was probably 4 or 5 years old, at least 5. And I said, woo! Right? That with the turbulence almost took me out. I was like, wow. Because you see how young she was watching what was going on in her household as a 5-year-old. So I knew if my children had sight, I wanted them to not just see me be busy, but be productive. Because there's a big difference between being busy and doing a bunch of stuff and not producing. So if I'm going to co-found and establish a family, then I need to be one of the mentors in the family. So that's the way I looked at it. And it, my personal development journey started there. And I did just look, although the Quran and the Sunnah, we need it so much because that's the blueprint that we need. I looked in other books as well, you know, because sometimes as Muslims, we go, well, if it's not here, then I don't want anything to do with it. You pick the book up, read it, and what is outside the perimeter of Islam, you leave it. That's it. And then take the beneficial knowledge and apply it. Don't just read it, apply it. So that's what it was for me.
I love it, mashallah. And just to touch on what you just said, that yes, the Quran and Sunnah paramount, right? But Allah inspired these people to write these books. Like they didn't just think of this stuff out of thin air. Like you said, success leaves clues. Allah is the definition of success. He leaves clues. He gives you the inclination to put pen to paper. So yes, we can you know, take from these books. And as you said, you know, take the good of it and leave off the rest. I mean, right? I love it. Go ahead.
Well, this hadith even a little bit more, where the Prophet ﷺ said, "The word of wisdom is the lost property of the believer. Wherever he finds it, he's most deserving of it," in Sunan al-Tirmidhi. So that addresses it. So whether you're dealing with astronomy or learning about biology or whatever it may be, again, the word of wisdom is the lost property of the mu'min. You know, and that's what caused the Muslims to be at their pinnacle and to spread and to grow in our glorious, illustrious history. And if we want to look at the failure now, we could also look at that lack of that personal development and where we are as a mu'min, in my opinion. But I'm sorry, I think Coach Nyla was about to speak.
Yeah, my intentional personal development came with being in the network marketing field. And I say intentional personal development because you learn a lot of things through life. You know, you learn a lot of things through schooling and things that you just take, and it does allow you to be a better person. But it's just, you just take it as it is and you keep moving on and you do the thing, and you just do the thing, right? But being intentional about it was realizing that I actually had to unlearn a lot of things that I was taught growing up. I had to unlearn things that not only that I was taught growing up, but that I just happened to just see and take in. And that was affecting my life in ways that were not as beneficial as they should have been. Or, you know, how you have certain things that are needle movers that, you know, move you a lot faster to your goal than you want, you know, than you are moving to. So you have to learn what are the things that are, that's going to do that. Or, and you also have to unlearn the things that are holding you back. So knowing that, and I didn't learn that until I was in my first business ever. Well, when I'm going out, I would say my first business ever, but my first business ever was actually in high school. They kind of did something like that, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. So my first real business was they encouraged that personal development. And in how I grew up, you know, kind of personal development was called self-help. And self-help was not okay. It's like, you had a problem. You had some issues, you know, and that type of thing. So being able to say, oh, well, this is something that you should be doing. This is something that you should be intentional. This is something to help you become better, become a better you, become, you know, better in your relationships, in your life, and everything like that. And then I love reading and taking in information anyway. So I'm like, okay, what else can I learn? But it took so long. I actually had a Tony Robbins program that I got from, this is crazy, I got from a thrift store. And it was cassette. We don't talk about, you know, we already talk about cassettes. The 30-day program. And it sat on my shelf for 2 years. 2 years before I opened it. I actually had it before I got into the business that I was in. And I was like, you know what? Let me open it. It was day 5 of that program that I had this breakthrough, that I sat in my car, cried, everything like that. And I said, you know what? I had to be better. That's when I knew for sure that it's like, you know what? What I'm doing right now is not going to get me to what I want. So I need to change that. So that was the intentional start of my personal development journey.
Mashallah. Listen, I mean, we all roads lead back to Tony Robbins for a lot of us. Listen, I mean, he's the OG. What are we going to do, right? But you know what I like about what you just said, Coach Nyla? We're all in coaching, right? And we can probably speak to this same concept, this same thing that we see. And that is that people sit on the information or sit on the action to go get the information, you know, click the button. You've seen this ad 20 times. You've seen us 20 times. Just click the button, right? This is an off question, but I think it's something that we need to answer. Why do you think that is? Why did you sit on that information for 2 years? Why did it just sit there? I'm sure there are people that take your business and do it with it. Come on with it. Come on.
The interesting thing is with me, you know, I mean, it's, you can have a fear. Well, with me, you know, it's different things. The fear of the unknown. I thought it was actually a good idea. I heard about Tony Robbins. I just, you know, didn't open it up. And mind you, like I said, it was in a plastic, everything, 2 years. And, you know, you quote unquote let life get in the way. And then you're just like, okay, I'm just doing this. I'm existing. You know, you're doing the thing. You're busy. Like Coach Strathman said, you know, you want to be productive. You know, don't be busy, but be productive. But we hear people say that a lot. I'm busy. I'm too busy. And it just has to take something. And we've talked about it and heard it, you know, the POD, you know, the point of decision or the point of disgust, where you're like, you know, it got to be something different. It has to be something different. So, you know, until you get to that point, you know, you won't change, you know, until you get to a point of decision or a point of discuss, you won't change. And I was, apparently I wasn't there yet. So I had to, even though I had the information, even though I physically bought the information, I went out and did it because I saw it. And I was like, oh, this seemed like it would be something good to watch or listen to or whatever. And I didn't do it, but I didn't, it's just that I wasn't ready. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. The teacher was always there. I just wasn't ready to receive the information yet.
I want to chime in on that too, kind of going into why. Because one of my mentors, I asked the same question. And he said, you know why? This is why. Because at the end of the day, he described success in theory. He said, success is practicing the simple disciplines on a daily basis. And failure is making little errors in judgment on a daily basis. So imagine this. A person picked up a cigarette, they smoked it. At the end of the day, they can't breathe, have an asthma issue, all that, they trace back to the cigarette. The next day, be done. See, failure doesn't happen at the end of the day. You don't have catastrophe at the end of the day because you didn't get up, you didn't put in work, you didn't make the calls, you didn't get the education. It doesn't happen. It sneaks on you slowly. So it's not the first cigarette that's gonna kill you, give you lung cancer. Like what happened to my father, right? He moved up, right? He started at 16. A year from now, you know, I'll be 47. He died when he was 47. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it wasn't the first one. It was probably the 257,000th one, if that makes sense. So the little errors in judgment that happen over time, that's why. Because it's easy to do, but it's also easy not to do. So that's why less than 10% of people never get past the first chapter of that person's development book. We want it now. We want it immediately. Now in the internet age, we in the scroll age, you can't even keep my attention. How many people are joining the stream and then leave without getting jewels because it's free 99? You know what I'm saying? So we had to learn that it is the little things over time that make the difference. It's like going to the gym. Oh, the gym don't work. You go one time. Okay. But if you go one time a few times a week, you spend, you know, 5 hours in the gym for the month versus 5 hours in one day. That's life stuff. Right. And we get older and think we can intellectualize and rationalize it, but we're losing the babies who don't hear no and the can'ts and all the stuff. And they achieve so much until the world beats them down and they accept it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's why we're not into training, but that's what my mentor told me.
We can go in, sounds like, on that particular vein. But I truly wanted to talk to you guys and have you answer that question about the whole personal development piece individually and collectively, you know, as a trio, because literally that sets the stage for everything else, right?
So yeah, exactly.
Period. Go ahead, Sister Fatima. Speak on it.
That's it. And people ask us all the time, especially me, because, you know, they did something to me, you know, and I'm like, oh, first of all, let's get that out there. Let's do a little house cleaning, y'all. We have to, you know, as Muslims, we're still focused on the distractions of this world versus the Qadr of Allah. We either intentionally or unintentionally diminish the Qadr of Allah and disrespect it. And then we go, well, you know, if this hadn't happened, then and they wouldn't be here, and these kids, and you know, and I always say, carry the two, and woo, right? Instead of focusing that energy, that good energy, on a good area of life, they go, oh, how did you do? And they want to jump over personal development and personal accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, we like to say we've grown in our community. Well, then we need to act like that, right? We need to act grown. We need to do what grown people do. And then ultimately, we can do what kings and queens do, you know, because what is that quote? Your past is what your future does. So when are we going to start working on our future? How much more time do we have to work on our future? And I start thinking about time and how old I was and how long I've been married and were my kids going to sit and stay at this size or were they going to grow? And if they were going to grow, I needed to grow too. So I had to understand the power of the Qadr of Allah, and I didn't have time because I don't own time, and I need to work and start working hard and start working now. Because once we're doing our personal development work, they separate in the fact that they need to do personal development work in order to heal. They want to jump over to the healing. Can't do that. It's steps to this. So we have to respect all the steps in order to get the brass ring of the reward, and we're still working. It does. Personal development work does not stop. Right. It never stops. You never get there and go, oh, I'm good, I'm here.
Quick question with that. Quick question I want to tag on that, Coach Fatima, is the healing. Like you said, the personal development part is ongoing. Do you think the healing process is ongoing too? Do you think that there's an ED ever at the end of the word heal? Heal? Like, is it healed or is it always healing?
I think it kind of depends on the person and at the rate they're going. But I don't want, for me personally, I don't want to just say, I'm healing, I'm healing, I'm healing. Because then I got to revisit trauma, trauma, trauma. Because those words, again, intersect all the time. So I like to lead with in the morning, okay, I healed over here. Now I'm going to go over here, heal on this. And I'm just going to keep going in different areas. But I might be done with the, okay, I have to heal from the gossip. I've been done with that years ago. Come on with it. Right? So come at me with it. But you be ready to take that L when I come back at you. Because see, I heal from the gossip part. Right? Or the not knowing part, because then I embrace the color of Allah. So I don't sit in that. I don't stay there because that's done for me. I think it just depends on the decision that a person gets. You got to make a decision to heal. Some people want to be the victim because they get attention, but I want attention because I healed, not because I'm hurting. That's the difference. So that decision lies within the person. Because nobody's going, what you going to do, wait for somebody to give you permission to heal ultimately? Well, it's time for you to heal now. You allow, I gave you permission. No, that's within you. So I think it depends on what area. But you can slow it down. You can slow down your healing by not doing the personal development work. You might not reach your healing because you don't want to, you don't want to do that. That's too much. It's too chaotic. But what you're doing is not chaos. By not healing, so I think it's relative and it depends on who it is. To be honest,
I agree. I recently had a conversation, and so what you said kind of triggered me to say that. And you know, there are certain areas, me personally, where I can say I've healed, right? But for me, you know, for me, the word healing is I'm in a constant state of personal development, in a constant state of saying, okay, I'm working on this particular area here. I'm working on this particular area here. For me, you know, there's something that I say to myself and, you know, even to the women that I coach, even in business, is that, you know, you want to leave this earth better than you were when you got here. And so you need to constantly be thinking about that. So, you know, okay, say maybe I healed from this thing over here, but I still got this stuff over here. Right. Maybe still stemmed from, you know, trauma one, you know what I mean? So, you know, I'm in the process of healing, you know, in those areas. And so I just wanted to touch on that because I just did a live and this was one of the topics that we were discussing. But this particular question is for Coach Nyla and for Coach Fatima. What was the pivotal point for the both of you when you decided to work together? And I think this is important because I'm gonna just be real. I ain't never seen polygyny work. I'm being honest. I've never seen. Okay. And I remember when I met you, you met all three of you. And I'm so amazed by you, and I still am. And that's why you're on here, right? And, you know, pray for all the success, you know, in the world and in the akhirah. Ameen. But please, for those who may either be in polygyny and it's not working for the women, or they're about to embark on polygyny and they're trying to figure things out, what was that pivotal point for you, for the two of you?
Mine was very simple. Mine was waiting for her.
No. Yep, that's pretty much it.
Because people know the story. They know that when it came in, I had a particular idea of what it would look like and what my co-wife would look like. I knew who she was, you know, so I just had a totally different idea. But the thing is, I still tell people that you know, don't get to the point where you are trying to force something. If it's going to work, it's going to work. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. It did get to a point where I was like, you know what, forget it. You know, whatever. But how did that change? It changes when you say, you know what, I know what I saw. I know what it can be. I know what it can look like. So I'm not going to give up on it, you know, because I know who I saw in this person. I know that it could be some other things that need to be worked through or whatever the case may be. But I know that this person is the type of person that she is, that is not going to be something that she's going to allow certain things or unknown things to stop her from getting something that is beneficial, you know, whatever the case may be. And I won't either. So when that was the case with me, when I was like, okay, well, forget it, you know, in my own head, in my own, because I was dealing with myself on my own for the most part. And I was just like, you know what? Eventually, and it was, so I went, even Coach Anthony was like, you already know what you know, wanted. You know what it, you know, it was. So he kind of, it was a reminder as well, you know. So sometimes you have to get a reminder of what you saw, what you thought, and what you want. And the thing is still getting, because it's two people involved, there's another person involved, you can't force your growth or your timing on someone else. If they're not ready, they're not ready. My thing was that I'm going to keep working on me. And when she's ready, I'll be here. Because in my mind, it was always, we're one big family. We're Team Al Mujahid. We're this, that, and other. So that's always been there. So it was like, you know what? Keep working on me. When this happens, you know, Allahu Akbar, that's what's going to happen. And then we're going to move forward from that.
What she trying to tell you is I was real hard-headed. Okay? We just going to say that because she's so great at just making me feel
comfortable. I am you.
No, I'm talking, girl, I'm so hard to get. It was kind of like the middle school or high school, that guy you liked that didn't really like you back, and you were just like, nah. And then you find out, yeah, he likes me. It was one of those. So what she did, I'm going to tell you what happened. The moment was she texted me. And I remember her saying, before my nerves get the best of me, da 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 da, right? This private text. So I'm not going to just roll it all out there, because it's the relationship that we have outside of social media. We have a private sisterhood type relationship. So I'm not going to just roll that text out. But I said, now I can work with this person. See, because I was talking to her and she talked to me, and it wasn't going between Coach Nadir. Now, it wasn't like he was like, she said this, and then, okay, she said this about you. Now, then she said, it wasn't that, but I was asking him questions that she needed to answer, and he gave me answers, but he can't give them like he can someone that they weren't designed for him, right? So he's going to answer him as a husband, as an introvert, as an INTJ, he's going to do all that. He's just going, boom, it wasn't that. Boom, she knew I wasn't going to divorce you. Boom. And I'm like, anyway, now I need a little more than this. So when she texted me that day and we had lunch, I said, okay, now I get to meet her outside of the label of wife. We get to meet each other as two women that happen to be married to the same husband. We didn't make our conversation about him. So that's how that was the moment when she texted me. I'm sure she wanted to talk to me years before that. But as I stated earlier, I'm going to talk when I want to, because I was being hard-headed. I'm a Jersey girl at heart, but I'm not from Jersey, never been there. But I'm just saying. So shout out to Coach Nyland for having courage, because I'm not easy to approach. I knew that. So, you know.
Y'all, I am cracking up over here, okay? Side question for Coach Nyla and Coach Fatima. Do you think that in every polygynous relationship that there needs to be that direct conversation with wife two, three, or four, you know, four, one, two, three, or four? Do you think that that's a conversation that needs to be had one-on-one? And then, you know, collectively, like if there's four, do you think that that's a conversation that needs to be had?
You know, here's the thing. I believe that I believe that the husband is the imam, and sometimes people overstep. You know, I believe that wives do that. And that's where a lot of issues come from, too, because it's like, well, you know, he can say one thing and you're not listening to what he's saying. It can tell you that this is, you know, because he could possibly see the bigger picture of it all. And then we're just seeing this one track mind type of thing. So what I believe, you know, somewhat as far as best practice, yeah, I do believe that everybody should communicate. I believe that everybody in the family should connect because you're a family. You know, you're connected that way. What I don't believe is that the husband gets overstepped in order for that to happen.
Right.
Because I do believe that it takes the it changes the dynamic, and it does take. We as women, when we get married, and I'm also speaking for many women out there, that we are not looking for a punk. We're not looking for somebody that we gonna walk over. We're not. Right. We're looking for a person that's a leader. You know, the provider, the maintainer. We're looking for someone with those qualities. If we as wives are overstepping that, then we take that away from them. You know, so when it comes to that, if you have one of my things, like if you have certain issues, you can come to them with the issues. I like that leaders, true leaders, kings, they'll sit there and say, you know, okay, I hear this, and they'll see if it's petty or not or whatever the case may be. It's like, you know what? Then we're gonna have a meeting. Then we're gonna do this.
Right.
We're gonna have that, you know, type of thing. Instead of like, okay, well, I'm just gonna. We've seen that before where a husband will say, you know, hey, I need this to happen this way. I need you to not do this. And she'll be like, well, you know what? I know he told me not to, but I did it anyway. And then now I'm feeling some type of way because she told me something that I wish I didn't hear and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And like, yeah, because you didn't listen. You know what I'm saying? You overstepped the bounds. You know, you bit the hand, Marty. You bit the hand. So it's just certain things that, you know, I do believe the conversations should be had. But I also believe that it's a proper way to go about the conversations. Because with Coach Fatima and I, the conversations did go, it didn't go between him like that, but he was aware of the conversations. Like he was aware of her feelings. He was aware of my feelings. And even to the point where I was like, okay, we'll reach out then. Because he knew what I wanted to do. You know, and I'm like, oh, but I don't really know. Type of thing. So, but if I would have just did that, and then he knows her better than I know because he's been around her more. He knows me better than, you know, because he's been around me more. You know what I'm saying? So it's that type of thing where it's like, okay, nah, I probably won't be best to do it that way. I'll probably be better to do it that way. You know, so it's the type of things that we need to make sure that the family is involved because the bigger picture is what we're striving for. So those who have the bigger picture in mind and success for the whole, you know, for the entirety of it all in mind, that's who we should be able to go to and get the guidance from. And we should go to the imam of the family, the leader of the family first, and then start moving forward to building bonds and things as far as that.
And I also think in addition to that, I think that the wives can communicate with each other if they have a healthy intention to communicate in a mature way that doesn't hurt the other, right? Because we know if we're going to say something that's hurtful, we're trying to hurt someone. That's what's so beautiful about being Muslim, being judged by Allah on our intentions. We know if we're intending to be petty or be hurtful or overshare to the point where we're hurting our co-wives. So if they're mature enough to have the conversation and create boundaries within that conversation, then by all means. However, it's what Coach Nyla was saying. We're not going, if the husband says, look, I don't think you should do that today. He doesn't have to put a tail on the end and say, because she said, whoa, just listen. Just listen to him. Because he's in between the women in the capacity of husband, not of wife. So the emotions of that conversation, he's not dealing in the emotion of that because he's not a wife, right? So we needed to respect the fact, like she was saying, that he's the one there in the forefront that has both stories. So yes, if they're mature enough, by all means. But if the husband is saying, wait a minute, hold on, we got to listen too.
Much I mean here too, because ahead, there are other aspects that are usually behind the scenes. See, for example, some of my mentors let me know, you had a leader that leads from the front that tells everybody what's doing, this command hearing, if you will. You had the one in the middle, you had one behind, and so on. But the best leaders are the ones whose teams say, you know what, look at what we did. Not knowing the influence, not knowing the motivation, not knowing the different things that were going on. So as a navigator of that ship, it's my responsibility to paint the vision, to get the buy-in, give them enough time to see that I'm demonstrating and doing what I'm supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? So they have to believe in me. All right. They have to believe in that vision that has to be painted. One. The second thing is that if we Muslims, the first thing we should do with that question is say, okay, what did the Prophet have to do with his wives? Well, he had a family meeting every night in one of his wives' house, the house he was going to be at. You know what I'm saying? And looking at the practical matters of today, it's extremely important that the man got your stuff together. You never know. I mean, you have children, you have assets, you have businesses, you have all these things going. So if you're not able to handle things in a proper fashion as a leader, then you may not be qualified to be practicing in the first place and need to work more on your leadership and your personal development. So that's where it comes in, because they didn't just haphazardly, hey, I want to be over there, I want to be. It didn't happen like that. You didn't know the things that's going on behind the scenes from, all right, this is how I want to see it. Okay, I'm seeing this event, but I'm not really feeling that. And as my wives, they don't want to please them, but at the same time, they also want to please me. So they'll hear me when I'm speaking about, this is how I think this should look, this is how blah, blah, blah. My leadership, I didn't want to be too rough or something, too full or something. It's like, all right, if I'm not going to be, then it's just going to be wishy-washy. I need to step this up. This is what I want, this is how I want it to look. I've already demonstrated this, so that means I have enough bank, I have enough deposits in that account for the trust to be there. Then this is how we're going to operate more, because the vision I have is bigger. So what we're doing right now with our first, I'll say the first relationships, I already had a vision for that 4 years ago. You know, our intros that we recently started doing, it's written in one of my journals. You know what I'm saying? When we were, because we talk about personal development, we spend literally tens of thousands of dollars on this individually. So we're talking about learning from whether it's the Brenda Burchard and flying the thousands of miles away and spending the thousands of dollars just on hotels and entrance fees to invest in us, because schooling is not the same as education. And when we're meeting with our family, we have a family council, what we call it, every single week. We meet, right? It's about 90 minutes. But one of the things we ask, what are you doing in personal development? What are you getting out of that? You know, so we're going through books a week. We're going through these different lessons, but it takes somebody to navigate that. And that's my responsibility as a navigator, to know and to really steer that ship. So it's the things that go on behind the scenes, because like you said, if the man sets the tone, then he also grows it, and he's supposed to steer that ship. So when they say you have more than twice the man to practice religion, you really do. You know, it's not for pumps, and we don't usually get that coming to us. You know, if somebody's trying to be a predator and they're trying to just marry to go through, they're not coming out with saying personal relationships.
Yes.
You know, we repel those type of individuals, and that's what we want to do. And at the same time, not only men set the tone, but the women have to raise their level of maturity, because everybody has to do their work. That's the thing we're all accountable and responsible for. But anyway, that's that piece. We're going to get some entrepreneurship.
MashaAllah, I love it. And Coach Fatima, I believe you alluded to this, like a woman is not going to follow a man. I'm one of those. I'm not going to follow a man that doesn't have leadership qualities. If there's an inkling of weakness or an inkling, I notice it right away and I'm like, oh, you got to go. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not going to follow it. So I feel, and that's why I was saying earlier, like when I look to polygynous relationships, it's like, what's the brother doing? I want to know what the brother got going on. And so you, perfect segue, Coach Nazir, what is the strongest character trait that the man who is in polygyny needs to have?
That's actually an easy question. That's an easy question, right? Because even though that's what character trait is, the strongest thing he must have is character, which means you have to have good morals. And of course, as a Muslim, if you have good morals, you aren't going to oppress yourself or anyone else. And you also make the right decision. So if you're not qualified for something, you're not going to go after it. See, charisma can get you to the top, but character is what keeps you there. So it's that strong character that helps guide your decisions upon every area of your life. If you don't have that, and that's something internal. That's something that can be demonstrated. That's something other people see. I can't get on there, I do this, I do that. I was bragging and boasting and stuff like that. And it's not for me to do. But having strong character, that's where it goes to. I teach men about going from boys being managed to being a man, and so to being a man of value, into a king, if you will, right? But a man of value, the whole underlying foundation is he has values. And he can demonstrate his value to those around him. But those values come from the character that you have. And you continuously build upon that by your learning, by your growth, by your gaining the wisdom from the lessons, from the successes, with even much more from the failures. Marshall, we had the best example of Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Period. Period. Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. MashaAllah. Do you feel like this king quality, we're going to call it what it is, right? So this king quality, do you feel like even speaking like that, that you catch flack from people?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But see, the thing, I didn't like the term to begin with because it usually comes with this bravado and all this martialism. But you know, think about it and you reflect on it. So, okay, the king answers to a lot of times, keep walking, right? So, when it comes to authority, when it comes to these types of things, as a king, you're doing much more. It's not about me. You know what I'm saying? It's not about what I'm doing. It's not for me. I'm good and I'm content and can be content. What I'm doing is trying to be for generations that I'll never meet. We are the first generation. We have the opportunity for my great grandchildren to see me without a full gray beard if I live long enough to get one. For my great 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 grandchildren to look at us and say, oh, this is where you get that attitude, or this is where you get that humor from. But this is the first generation that can do that. So the information I'm leaving and sharing with others is not only for us in the getting du'as on many different continents, it's for generations down the line to be set up. It's to be able to set up businesses so we no longer have to worry about money and we can worry about doing what really serves people. So you don't have to go get a job and have to focus on all this other stuff. We want to build enterprises that service each other that last for generations. So I'm doing it, one, because three things follow us after we're gone. That's just righteous children, money that you spend that continues to benefit people, and knowledge that benefits the people. And we think outstanding personal relationships falls under each one of those. And if we can do that until, then that means we can do that longer than we even breathe life. You know, so that right there is what it means to us. You know, and it's far more than me or you, just your lower desires and blah. Look, you see three of us right here. You don't see the 15 of us as a total. You know what I'm saying? And what we're building them to do, what I'm building my sons to be, as in being kings. This ain't regular talk. They're not talking about this. You know, Bill Gates and all these people that have this money and stuff. You know, whether regardless of what we say about their character, they're not teaching the same thing. They're not teaching their kids to go to school, get your grades, get a good job, and go work for somebody else. They're not teaching them that. You know, but we are privy if we open the books. We are privy if we actually have a library card and stop using the excuse that I can't afford it. I can't get the books and go to Barnes & Noble. I mean, how much library cards cost nowadays? They're pretty expensive. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're free. You know what I'm saying? So that matters. And if I can put in work now that serves me after I'm gone, and we know what happens after death, we know what happens in the grave, we know what happens after Nizan or Yom Qiyamah, if what we can do now that benefits us, you can't lose at all whatsoever. So, and you need money to fuel that message. So entrepreneurship, investing is that area that we can do if we pass and say, you know what, let's travel around the world for a year, see what's up, or longer, and do that. But it can only come by increasing your financial acumen and having those characters. So I teach my children, you got morals, you got your deen, and you got money. Those are going to affect all the other areas of your life. So learn those. Get your deen right first so you ain't worried about the money, because money is neutral. If you're a good person, it's going to make you better. You're going to go ahead and be able to do good things with it. If you're a bad person, it's going to expose your evil. You're going to do evil with it. But it's neutral as ever. Right. You know what I'm saying? And we ain't Christians, so we don't take and adulterate the verse that says the root of all evil, or money is the root of all evil, even though it says root of all kinds of evil. You know what I'm saying? We knew that when we were Christians. But we don't go for that. We look at the Sahaba who were concerned that if the Prophet ﷺ taught them dhikr, they came into the masjid and said, not the rich ones, not the rich brothers, not they doing it, not they making dhikr, what can we do? You know, they saw wealth as a means to benefit others. To this day where you have, we can go on and on and on about it, but those means are not going to come for us from working a traditional job. We honored to be unemployable by choice because we want to be the examples for our children and teach our children the things that our parents never taught us. But that's the reason.
You gave up. Listen, he came from football, okay? That was the football for me. But I want to point this out. I want to point two things out that you said, Coach Nasir, and that is, first of all, money is a tool, right? And so money is a tool to get you to where it is that you're looking to go. Money will change the trajectory of Islam as a society as a whole, right? Will change the Muslim society. We have to start thinking of money that way. And entrepreneurship, we are actually encouraged. Islam encourages us as Muslims to be entrepreneurs. So I am just loving like this talk track and you as the leader of your family, and also your wives in their leadership roles as women and as wives, also leading, all three of you just leading your, family. So much to take away, from this episode so far. And I still got a couple more questions, so I pray that we're still all right with time. Let me know. So what are three ways to thrive in relationships, including polygyny? So what are three ways to thrive? But before you answer that, I want to ask, do you think that polygyny gives you a one-up over maybe a monogamous relationship?
Trying to get us in trouble.
Who are you asking? So you want to answer that first? You want us to answer that first?
Either one. The floor is yours.
Does it give us a one-up? Yes. Yes. Because it requires more of you as a man. It requires that you deal with dynamics emotionally that you never have to deal with. All right. It requires you to be more. Okay. First. Second, I would take our tribe of 15 right now, at our age right now, I could take it against a monogamous family. We got you. You know what I'm saying? But no, it does. It really does give you one up because it helps you think on bigger lines. When I look at it as a Muslim, we should be encouraging men to practice polygyny. They already want to practice polygyny. I mean, it's in our nature, if you will, right? But you should try to strive to be qualified to do so, even if you don't intend to, even if you think it's a headache or whatever, that's fine. But for what it will make of you, it will require some things of you. It requires increase. It requires a lot of multiple intelligences to go. And that type of man, of course, there's not enough people on the planet for everybody to practice polygyny. So when they say, oh, it's not for everybody, forget that. Of course, not for everybody. We can do simple math. However, for those who do, let me give you an example. The video that was released, the music video by Drake, all right, it's just released called Falling Back, right? He married, I don't know, 25 women or something in the video, right? And actually, as a Jewish, he can do that. There's no restriction on the number of women. But does he have the capability to provide for them financially? Would women sign up for that? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we know they would. All right. It's Drake, a light skinned brother. but I'm just saying, a light skinned man. He messed with him. He grew his beard out, so he looks better now. But nevertheless, but he's Drake. He got the funds and stuff like that. Maybe he can be measurable with his time. Now, in his religion, the way he doing, he follow his scripture, he can marry all of them. So even though it was meant as a joke, it talks about the religious nature of men, but what you have to do and become in order to go ahead and practice it in a healthy manner where it's fulfilling and so on, it requires more of them. So do you have a one-up? Well, so far as emotions, you're not pushed. You're not pushed. You're not required to do that. The other thing is that I'll let you know to marry two, three, or four, right? But one, if you feel you can't be unjust. So either we are okay with our men being weak and unfair and unfit as women, thinking that, he's not qualified. He can't do this. I married a punk, a bum is what we're coming to. But I can look at buildings and structures where we are, where we travel to build cannons that walk down castles. I've seen, buildings and architecture, beautiful architecture. I've seen concubine quarters in where sultans live in the expansion of Islam, right? And I look at it today and how it's weak and withered down, where men don't have that same drive and that same desire moving forward. And we know as men, one of the things we desire is women. A lot of times, let us know this. We created women, you want women and children and wealth and home, all these types of things, right? But now if it's just restricted, limited to monogamy over the last 100 years, in which it's become normalized, then what has that made us as men? We feel we make it, we get to the pinnacle, then we just disrespect women because men are still in relationships with other women. You know, they jump down, they side pieces, they sugar daddies, all kind of other stuff that goes on society. Just because you're in a monogamous relationship don't mean you ain't a Jesse Jackson with extra babies or a Bill Clinton with all the ladies. See, monogamy tends to protect men. It says you got this one legal wife, everybody else, you know, really have to go ahead and take care of legally. But polygyny requires that you man up to take care of your responsibilities.
That's right. This is, I'm trying to remember because Coach Alexander is talking about the men. And I would still also say that it does give women a leg up as well. You know, those who are really looking at it and being very objective to it, it does. It allows us to be better. It allows us to become more because you have to learn how to be emotionally intelligent and emotionally mature. Not only that, you don't have to worry about single parent households and different things like that and jump downs and side chicks and all these different things like that. So not only does, you know, it gives the men a leg up because they have to be more, it also gives women that too because they have benefits in it, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, in order to even reap the benefits of it, you still have to work on yourself where we go back to that personal development. So once you're constantly developing your person, you know, that is a benefit in itself. And you don't have to work that hard in monogamy. You know, not to knock people who doesn't monogamy, it is what it is. But you don't have to work that hard because you can manipulate all day long. But when you're in polygyny, not so much so because it's going to be in the side, in the back of your mind, side of your mind, front of your mind, whatever the case may be. It's another person that's there. It's another person that probably can do this, probably can do that, probably can do this. Whether we want to believe that, whether we want to believe it or not, that affects us in some way, shape, or form, it is a motivator. It's a motivator in saying, you know what? Even if it's a part where you're like, I like that she know how to do that. I like that. I want to learn that too. It don't have to be even a whole competition thing. Not saying that it don't be, because we've seen that too. But it can also be, you know what, this is encouraging. You know what, I didn't even know about this. Now I'm going to learn this too. Oh, she knows this? That sounds pretty good. I'm going to learn that too. So yeah, in all, I think it gives society as a whole a leg up if that is what they practice and if they decide that, you know what, not only am I going to practice this, but I'm going to do it right, because doing it right means that I'm going to make sure that I'm not being manipulative, I'm not being hurtful, harmful, I'm having character, like, and the morals and things like that that Coach Navier talked about earlier.
In addition to that, just very quickly, for me personally, polygyny meant that when he wasn't at our home, I had more time to work on me in a more in-depth way. So I knew at the age that I am now, I said, but who knew when you're 20 that you need this kind of space to work on you? Because you don't know nothing about personal development anyway, right? So when I became older, I'm like, love you to death. But woo, I'm glad I ain't got to make breakfast and I can read this book right now, right? And he's not the guy to get in there, woman, and make my food. It's not that, right? But it is indeed an expectation there when he's home, okay? But I knew I needed more time with my grown-up daughters. They're all adults. And I knew I needed to have more time to me without the distraction. Okay? Be it a good distraction. But I needed more time to foster a better relationship with my Lord, with Allah, and work on my personal development. That happens when the kids are, you know, they get a little bigger and then the husband is gone and they're like, oh snap, what am I gonna do with me today, for me today? So that's what for me, that's what it was. I could just go a little deeper.
Listen, I don't know. Like, I might have to call you, Coach Fatima. Because me personally, right? So as I get older, as I mature, polygyny becomes more appealing to me. Just gonna be totally honest. And for that reason right there, Coach Fatima, that where I have time to myself, I still get the benefits of being married. I still, to me, get that protection, that companionship. Yes. But you go somewhere a couple of days or whatever the schedule look, whatever it looks like, you go somewhere. Yeah. I get to be over here.
Yes, that's the best part. Yeah, our daughter's willing. Our youngest baby, our youngest daughter.
We have five daughters, and two of them are married, three of them are unmarried. We're looking for good quality people that are willing to practice polygyny because they actually want their husband to practice polygyny after marrying them. You know what I'm saying? But finding the qualified people is a struggle. I know sisters got it bad. I'm a Wali. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to get my daughter married to righteous young men of value. You know what I'm saying? So it's a struggle.
Yes,
but indeed. Yeah, they never been in a relationship, none of that stuff. But they look forward to a polygyny, their husband practice polygyny and stuff like that. Eventually, when that time comes, inshallah.
Inshallah, and may Allah grant them tawfiq. I mean, because like just even in the first conversation that I ever had with you, you can see the benefit of polygyny, and I think we all can see it. You know, I think we all can see it, and we all know the benefits, especially from, you know, reading from an Islamic perspective, looking at the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Right, we can see it, and I think for us in present day, we need to see it practice well. And I think, you know, for your girls, and I'm sure they, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but in my opinion, right, they are able to make that decision for themselves because they see their parents practice it well, you know, and so this goes all the way back. I wanted to say this in the beginning, you know, is when you made the decision to share this gift, to share this practice with the rest of us. You needed to do that because we need to see more positive role models. Yes, you know, we have the life of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his wives radiallahu anhuma, but we need present day. We need 1400 years later with all going on in the world. We need something a little more, you know, a little closer. You know what I mean? To be able to touch and to see it. So jazakallah khair for, you know, answering that call. Yes. So the second part of that question is three tips on how they can thrive in relationships. You can put it in general or specifically in polygyny. Three tips.
I think we always talk about have the willingness to have the hard conversation. You have it and also listen to the perspective that's not just your own is a huge thing. The communication part. Ooh, if we could just sit down and make a safe space for couples that are married to speak about polygyny without anybody running off, getting triggered, raising up, getting in their feelings about it, then I think men and women alike would feel safe in discussing it, and it wouldn't be so doggone hard to do. Because then we could get to some resolve. We can't resolve anything if we just, you know, you bring it up and somebody head explodes, like conversation over, right? So communication, I would say communication is big.
I'll go into, in addition to that, minding your marriage. And that's whether you're monogamy or polygyny. When it comes down to it, people want to compare, and comparison is a thief of joy. So, you know, people want to compare so much, or, you know, or if it wasn't this way, or maybe, or lifts and all these different things like that. Or they see people on Instagram, these couples, and you see the snippets, those snippets of life, and thinking that just that's the whole thing, and then they become ungrateful. So the thing is that mind your marriage, and minding your marriage, you're minding your marriage to make sure that it's the best marriage that you can have. Not because you're competing with this person and that person, because you want it to succeed. So that's kind of what I would give for that.
I would suggest investing in yourself. Investing in yourself, because there's always a return on investment. Mm-hmm. So my mentors asked me, they said, you chose to be right here where you are right now financially 5 years ago. That blew my mind. I'm like, what? I'm broke. He's like, yeah, we know. He said, we know. 5 years ago, you made a decision of what to do, where to work, how to spend, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what? What are the last five books you read? I hadn't. It was a long time before that. Right? So I would ask person to evaluate yourself, do yourself a report card. Then invest in yourself, because there's a return on that investment. So if you can't name the last five books that you had that are involved in increasing you, meaning like whether it's leadership, communication, right, active listening, all right, teamwork, financial IQ. If you can't name the last five books that you did, then you are on the path of making small errors in judgment on a daily basis, which leads to failure. Mm-hmm. But by investing in you, I don't care if you're talking about buying a book, an audio program, or going to, if you want to practice polygyny, go to polygynymasterclass.com, invest in our course, learn from us directly, or counseling or coaching from our wives. But invest in you. Going to the, getting Tony Robbins information, going to listen to one of the recent books that we finished, and my children are in and finishing up, is Hustle Harder, Hustle Smarter by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. Read by him, and you can get it for free on YouTube. It's up there. It's like 8 hours or something. This is a little quicker. But by investing in you, you get these same life principles, and you get these clues that are left by those who are successful in different areas of life. So if you don't invest in you, you ain't going to have a return. You're not going to materialize that. You're not going to increase. It's going to decrease because nothing stays the same. Just like we're talking to you right now, traveling through space on this rock that's spinning with sales living in us and dying in us, we're getting closer to that day where it's going to be a wrap. That's all reality. But if we're investing in us, then you can't lose because there's a return on that investment, just like Allah Ta'ala is going to return and repay us for the different salat and all these different things that he's given us the ability to do. And through his rahmah, is going to bless us for doing those things. So, you know, so, so important. Investing in yourself. If you're not investing in yourself, then you're already losing. You know what I'm saying? But the good part is you can change that direction overnight. You might not be able to reach your destination overnight. At least you can change your direction and get there, which reminds me of the Prophet Islam said, a person will practice these at a hellfire his entire life until he gets a bow's length away from paradise. Starts doing those deeds, dies doing those and get gentlemen, get paradise, right? And then there will be a person who will do the deeds of paradise their entire life. Stop doing those deeds, do the deeds until he gets a bow's length away from paradise. Starts doing the deeds of the people in hellfire, die doing those deeds and get hellfire. So it ain't how you start, it's how you finish that matters. But making that choice and investing in yourself is what can change everything. That's a long
listen, answer. I'm a law about to tear, about to cry some tears, you know. I want to ask this question, and for all of you, do you feel that there is a greater intensity in 2022 to invest in your spiritual, your personal, your business development? Do you feel like there is a greater intensity, and why? And I'm gonna just say my opinion first, and the answer for me is yes. I feel like Yom Kiyama is near. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, were like, well, if Yom Kiyama is near, why do I need to do all of these things? Why am I still, you know, working on these things? And I think it goes back to what you just said. Like, it's how you finish. You know what I mean? Like, why stop? You know, there's a hadith, and it's a hadith that I quote often, and it talks about if Yom Qiyamah is about to be announced, you know, Yom Qiyamah is about to be announced, the trumpet is about to be blown, and you have a seed in your hand, plant the seed. That goes back to intention, and that goes back to, as Coach Nazir said, like, yo, it's how you finish. You had that seed in your hand, and that seed was something of good intention. We don't know. That could have been the act. Just the planting of that seed could be the act. Right. Man, go ahead. I'm listening.
You know, ask the question. Is it more intensity?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is it important? You know, like, do you think that in this day and time, you know, right now, 2022, we've been through the pandemic, we've been through all this stuff. Is it still important to go hard?
Yeah. Oh yeah. you have to go hard before you can't anymore. You know, you don't get it's that thing where like you don't get a day off. You know what I'm saying? If you have children, if you have grandchildren, if you have you have to keep going. Cause like I was saying earlier, who owns time? Allah Ta'ala owns it. So do you get a break? Do you really get a break? You might get a moments where there's breaks, but you got to keep going. You have to. Because I started thinking the older I got, I said, how much more time do I have to collect these good deeds? I'm glad these people make a dog for us in these comments because I need all the help I can get outside myself. Right. So I'm like, alhamdulillah, I want to send them back just the same. May their families have success in whatever they make dua for us for, be it that in their lives as well. But I'm like, I need some help. And then OPR and then these duas, and I'm like, oh my goodness, it's so powerful because we don't have time to be lazy. We have no time to be lazy. You know, it might be one meme I gotta make and I'm ready to jump off something very high. And I'm like, you know what, I got to get this meme out. I can go lay down and get in the bed after it, you know, or schedule whatever, or have this meeting. But because I will regret it if the next day I can't get up and do that. And I could have did it right then. And I just wasted that time. You know, we don't have time to squander. We don't.
I read a quote on that. It said, procrastination is the arrogant assumption that God owes you another day to do what he gave you the opportunity to do now.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I agree with it. So, it's just being not only that, but being very much more intentional with it. You know, we know how they say, well, working harder versus working smarter, or working smarter versus working harder. But yeah, you want to go hard in a smart way. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, it's you're going to reap the benefits. You're going to, and that just, you know, just stacking up the goodies, because like Coach Brandon said, like, I need all the goodies I can get, you know. But when it comes down to it, it's like, you know, if the intention is there, even if it's something as little as talking to your child about something or guiding them through something or whatever the case is, because every time I feel a little annoyed and I go, what? You know, whatever. But then I have to think, you know, like, okay, and I'm gonna have to answer for this. Like every time I do something, for the most part, I'm like, I'm thinking, I'm gonna have to answer for this. I'm gonna have to answer for this. I'm gonna have to answer for this. So that type of thing is like being intentional with it. So it's not just doing the work and doing the stuff. It's like, okay, how am I gonna do it to, you know, make this be massively beneficial? So yeah, so not only just going hard, but going very, you know, going hard intentionally with it.
Inshallah, all amazing takeaways. And for all of you that are watching this live, I pray you guys have had your notebook out this entire time. And for those of you that listen to this later, you guys know I always tell you, when you listen to this podcast, make sure you have you know, your pen and you know, notepad available, because gems will be dropped and there's always something that you can take away and go and implement, right? So I think that these three tips, all three of these tips, whether you're in polygyny or whether you're in monogamy, as you all the coaches have stated, you can put into practice. So this is for Coach Nyla and Coach Fatima. So what does it mean to be a boss hijabipreneur? Inshallah. And then I have a question for Coach Anazir after this.
For me, what it means is, like I was saying before, is being that mentor and taking part of the vision for the family. So if you're married and you have a husband, he has a vision, we got to get in the game and take part in it, help support it, see where we can bring some education or where we're needed in that vision. Because I noticed that many times as Muslim women, we'll sit and we'll watch our husbands kind of create the vision, and then he'll fulfill it, and they'll do all the groundwork, and he's in the trenches, and we're going, look at him go, you know, instead of saying, okay, what's the vision? What do you need supportive? Where can I give my ideas? Because sometimes men want us to say, okay, here's my idea. What do you think? Like, as the leadership in the family, as the imam of the family, here's some ways to help with that vision. So to show our children and the generations to come, like our daughters were saying, and this is an older daughter, so she, you know, so for her to say it, I'm like, she's been watching, right? And she said, I'm so proud of the work that you're doing, Umi, by making videos, because she remembers when I didn't want to do it. because I might get met with opposition. And if I get met with opposition, I'm gonna check you. So I just didn't want to get in the confrontation, right? But when she said that, I said, she's watching to see if I'm getting in on the vision. See if I'm putting in some type of work, not being busy, but being productive. And as a Muslim woman, I think we need so much more representation from Muslim women in the arena of entrepreneurship, because the tide is turned. It's not turning, it has turned. So women can understand that we need to be this celebrity for our daughters and our sons even, and maybe our daughters' in-laws or our son-in-laws, right? So they can see, don't be afraid to get out there, because we're Muslim women, we're needed. We're needed in this world, right? So the representation of being an entrepreneur is to me a responsibility if we can do it. I mean, if you're home with your babies, we gotta send stuff through the mail. We get that, we had babies. We were running businesses with our babies. Sometimes you be nursing and be stamping an envelope, right? But it's about supporting that vision, inshallah. So to me, it's just, let's embrace it.
I totally agree. That's pretty much the same for me, being an active part of the legacy. Not only being an active part of the legacy, but also being an example, you know, being a great positive example for people to see and be influenced by, and, you know, racking up all the good deeds you possibly can by doing so.
Mashallah, listen, add me to all of those deeds. You know, you have racked up millions of deeds just sharing the information that you shared, inshallah, on this episode. And so I always love to get the male perspective, Coach Nasser, on this. And how important is it for you as the imam, as the leader of your family, to advocate for your wives and other women as entrepreneurs? What are the benefits of that?
Well, for me, it's mandatory as a father, also a five daughter responsible for them. All right, there's a couple things, because it gets tricky in this area. One is that in the world that we live in, all right, we live in an opportunity, unprecedented opportunity. Again, we're streaming live right now from the house. No extra cost. I mean, yeah, we have equipment and all that stuff and everything, but it's internet. You know what I'm saying? It's unprecedented opportunity. All right, so therefore, one, it allows you to focus and keep your character intact and not have to compromise your integrity as a woman. All right? And you also set your own path. So I've been entrepreneurial minded because I was around great uncles. For example, they had money, they were illiterate, came from Mississippi, selling watermelons, they were literally in their 30s, at least the one I was learning from. But he put me to the side one day after he saw me living these dope dealers back in the 90s, and he was like, he said, you know, I got enough money, I could buy five Rolls Royces cash. You know, and he started breaking down game to me, just teaching me some basic things that really stuck with me that other people didn't have, or all the degrees and all that kind of stuff. So for me, I'm like, all right, this is an opportunity. Entrepreneurship and investing is an opportunity to take and manifest something bigger than you that causes you to serve other people. And as a daughter, as a father of a girl, of girls, you know what I'm saying? You want to make sure that nobody is financially oppressing them, or, you know, holding them where they feel that the needy obligate. All right. Not that it's there as a, you know, to use as a weapon against the man, because I still believe one of the biggest challenges is that if they're not working on personal development, whoops, not an entrepreneur, there goes that femininity.
Right.
Now I need to be out here and be a man, be a box star, when you don't have to do that whatsoever. You don't have to compromise your integrity, your character, or your femininity, which is really unattractive, to run a business. You know what I'm saying? So with that, we have so many examples of that throughout our illustrious Islamic history, or going even back to our Black history with Madam C.J. Walker and all this stuff down, that there's so many other examples, and there's unprecedented times. That's why support, to me, they learned. That's why they were preteens reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's why we play Cash Flow 101. They understand the cash flow quadrant and where to get done, why they have the YouTube channels and how they're growing and they're learning this marketing. Now they see the digital stuff and we're being examples from them, right? So it's extremely important for my daughters to be on that. And then, of course, my sons to be on a higher level when it comes to being kings. They have to do that. You know what I mean? I know that when it's time for my son's marriages and stuff to pop off, it's going to be an application procedure, I'm pretty sure. You know what I'm saying? Because of who they are and what they become and what they develop prayerfully. So, no love, no stress. But that right there is extremely important for them because, again, looking at it from a father and being able to do what they want to do out of a passion and a desire to do it, not because they have to do it and waste time of their life going around chasing dollars when they could put things together and have it chase them, because now the whole entire world is your playground. You know, it's a totally different thing. So that's why it's important from my perspective.
I mean, you know, praying for just, you know, this next generation, this generation that we are raising, you know, praying for their Islam and, you know, like you said, their development and, you know, just everything. They're going to be something else. Ameen. They are going to be something amazing. Ameen. You know, they're literally taking, you know, the excellence of where we stop and they're starting from I just sit here like this, just in awe. Yes.
You know, yes. Yes.
One thing I want to touch on, and this is both, you know, of course, you know, we big up the women on this channel, but I love that, you know, you talked about your sons too, because they in turn, of course, you know, they big up themselves, but then they're also creating another, you know, version of what you've, you know, established, you know, Coach Nasir, your sons are doing that. But I believe that our society, both as a Muslim society and as a whole, will become better as a result of this mindset that you have. And the reason why I say that is if we look back to the wife, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his first wife, Khadija radiallahu anha, even them coming together, of course, this is a man of excellence. He's the prophet, right? But then we have her, who's at the upper echelon of the society. She married up. So she's already up. She married up. And I believe what you are teaching your daughters, they can only up can come to them. Nothing that's below to me, that's why I teach entrepreneurship. I teach entrepreneurship to women and girls for that right there. And financial literacy, because it's not about, you know, I'm a single lady, or it's not about the Beyonce. It's not about the Beyonce mentality. It really isn't. It's about what Coach Nasir just said. It is about her understanding that she requires more. When she's financially literate, spiritually literate, she ikra, she understands her Islam for herself. Some okey-doke prince, okay? Because, you know, some okey-doke prince, okay? Can't even step to her. Only a king could even think about even looking in her direction.
Right.
That changes the trajectory of our entire society, Muslim community, and our entire society, because it brings us up. Excited. And I am full. Wallahi, I am full from this conversation. I knew I was going to learn a lot. I knew I was, but I didn't think that it was going to cause the thoughts that are going. I mean, the thoughts are all over in my head, and I got some homework, you know, after this episode, and I'm going to enjoy listening to this, you know, inshallah, as I edit it. So, how can the Boss Hijabipreneur audience connect with you? I heard you mention earlier one of your courses, and the one that I saw was the Course Relationship Mastery Inner Circle Program. What else is there that you have in your repertoire? Please let our audience know, inshallah, how they can benefit.
Yeah, they can find us pretty much outstandingpersonalrelationships.com. That's the website. We have a number of different courses, like the Relationship Mastery Inner Circle, whether you're single, whether you're looking at premarital stuff, for example, whether you're monogamy or looking to practice or already practice polygyny. We have those, of course, specifically focused on polygyny at polygamymasterclass.com. But our handles are Outstanding Personal Relationships, of course, on YouTube, and Facebook, and Outstanding Relationships on IG. But the main thing is our website. Matter of fact, next week, this time, but next week we're releasing our own private community. All right, so it's going to be a supportive community. You'll be able to access us on a daily basis right there in our area where we're posting different videos, having different views and stuff like that. You have to worry about copyright strikes and anything else really from social media. But getting on our email list where we send out a newsletter, we send up a weekly wrap up. We do respond to people at our email addresses, but the main thing is outstandingpersonrelationships.com. Google it, go to the website, connect with us. You know, we'll love to, you know, share with you what's going on. Or well, we have about 500 or so videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we're grateful to be able to do that and to really build and grow. But what we're trying and striving for this year is really helping 100 or 1,000 families take things to the next level in their personal relationships. So, Coach Fatima, you can reach her with coaching and counseling directly at CoachFatima.com. Coach Nyla, the same. CoachNyla.com. So, you know, there's many different ways you can spell it and pronounce it, but you go to the website, you're going to find it, and you can definitely feel to reach out to us as well. I do coaching on a very select basis, usually with executives and entrepreneurs, so my coaching is not open, it's application only. Nevertheless, outstanding profession will be at.
Love it, love it, love it. You heard it here first. The community will be open next week. Boss Move, by the way, because there are only a certain amount of hours in the day. You know, and with the community, you can reach so many more. And so that will help you to achieve your goal of creating this legacy, mashallah. So may Allah grant you Tawfiq. I'm actually sad this episode is ending. I can't. Mashallah. But one of the things that I pray that the listener takes away from today's episode is that make every action and aspect of one's life worship, including our relationships, no matter how unconventional. Mashallah. And my inspirational quote of the week, I think you will enjoy this, especially Coach Nyla, because you said something that is in this quote a little bit earlier. It is only when the sun of the ego sets that true everlasting light of the soul and the innate beauty within the human being can rise. This refining of the soul to be pure, to be in pure alignment with God, is the essence of the station of Ihsan. In defining Ihsan, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam famously said, "It is to worship God as though you are seeing him, for even if you cannot see him, he sees you." And this is an excerpt from one of my favorite books, The Secret of Divine Love by our sister, A. Helwa. If you haven't gotten that book, I didn't talk enough about it. You better go get it. All right. Jazakallah khair for being here. Please leave us with any final thoughts, inshallah.
Well, I have something to say to Sister Halima. I wanted to thank her because when she first met the two of us, we were not ever met with any negativity, or she didn't treat us in such a way where we didn't, one of us didn't exist. And she was so in our corner on that day, and I remember that. And she took a photo with us that we still had. We still have it. But the way she embraced us was in such a way that the city that we originate from, we didn't get met with that kind of love. And I want to thank you, Jazakallah khair. That's one of my really, really powerful memories. And then I said, you know what? We're going to be all right. Because that sister embraced us both. Not one, but both of us. And with that, our whole family. So Jazakallah, thank you so much, sister, for that love. I appreciate it. We just do.
y'all don't know. In my older age, in my maturing, I'm a crybaby, y'all. I used to be a gangster. Like, for real. It's the little things. Alhamdulillah. You never know how you impact someone. I so appreciate y'all. And, you know, may Allah grant you tawfiq individually, and may Allah grant you tawfiq collectively in what you are doing. And may, you know, Allah open up the pathway. Al-Fatah. May he open up the pathway for people to see the good in what it is that you're doing. And, you know, may more people embrace, polygyny. You know, I might raise my hand. You know what I mean? I'm talking to y'all. I'm going to raise my hand. I mean,
we're going to be out here crying.
So JazakAllah Khair for being here, for the audience, for tuning in. Inshallah, join me next time as we talk about overcoming the top three challenges Muslim female entrepreneurs face. Peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace.